The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Welcome to our Unitarian Universalist service. No matter where you are on your spiritual journey, no matter what your background, your beliefs, or who you hold closest, you are welcome here. We gather today as a community committed to the sacred worth of every person. In a world that often pressures us to conform or divide, we celebrate the full, radiant mosaic of human experience. All racial, cultural, and ethnic backgrounds are honored here. All gender identities, gender expressions, and sexual orientations are celebrated, seen, and uplifted. Today's theme, this, I believe, invites us to share our most profound personal truths and the values that anchor our lives. As we open our minds to the diverse perspectives and beliefs in this room, we affirm that your unique story, your doubts, and your convictions enrich us all. Whether you come with an open heart, a questioning mind, or a spirit in search of comfort, let us draw the circle of love and justice even wider. Bring your joys, your vulnerabilities, and your truest convictions. Welcome home. I would light the chalice now. As we light our flaming chalice, we kindle a symbol of our shared faith. We ignite this flame as a symbol of our shared covenant. We do not gather to conform to a single creed, but to weave a stronger tapestry for our many truths. We light this chalice for the beliefs that sustain us, for the sacred worth of every race, culture, and heritage, for the profound divinity in every gender identity and expression, for the courage to look at one another and say, I see you, I believe you. May this light guide our hearts to listen deeply, to celebrate our differences, and to honor the holy and unique spark within each of us today. We're lighting the peace lamp. At Thomas Paine, we also light a peace lamp at the start of each service. This flame illuminates the truth we carry and the justice we seek. May its quiet glow remind us that true peace requires equity for every race, creed, and gender expression, and in its warmth, let our diverse beliefs become a collective force for healing and love. Thank you, Jeff. The invitation. This service today is inspired by This I Believe, an organization found in 2004 to engage people from all walks of life in writing and sharing brief essays about their core values. This modern initiative is based on the famous 1950s radio program hosted by journalist Edward R. Murrow. Back then, Americans gathered by their radios to hear guiding principles distilled in a few moments by people like Eleanor Roosevelt, Jackie Robinson, and Helen Keller, as well as cab drivers, scientists, and secretaries. Their words brought comfort and inspiration to a country deeply wounded and worried about the Cold War, McCarthyism, and racial division. In reviving this project, Executive Director Dan Gettleman noted that the goal is not to persuade people to agree on the same beliefs, but rather to encourage the much more difficult task of developing respect for beliefs different from our own. I've often listened to this radio program and wondered how succinctly, yet poignantly, I could create my own personal credo. It's no easy task to fit your deepest convictions into just 350 to 500 words and then share them aloud with a room full of people. Yet throughout our service today, we will hear personal reflections from members of our own congregation who stepped up to this challenge. They are sharing the core values they carry out into the world. As you listen today, how do their words resonate with you? I know their thoughts will be met with our collective reverence, curiosity, and introspection. Let us open our hearts to their truths. Our first reflection today comes to us from Troy Chapman. It is from September 28, 2008. His powerful words were originally written and recorded as part of the national This I Believe initiative. Though Troy's poignant essay, titled Caring Makes Us Human, exists in the public domain for anyone to find, it comes to us this morning with a much deeper, more personal connection. Troy's partner, Marianne Gorman, is a cherished member of our own TPUF congregation. Marianne has spoken with Troy, who warmly welcomed the opportunity to share his voice and his truth with us today.
NPR News, this is Weekend Edition. I'm Leanne Hansen.
I believe in mystery.
I believe in family.
I believe in being who I am.
I believe in the power of failure.
And I believe normal life is extraordinary.
This I believe.
Our This I Believe essay today was sent to us by an inmate at Kinross Correctional Facility on Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Troy Chapman is serving a sentence of 60 to 90 years for second-degree murder. So far, he has served just under 24 of those years. Here's our series curator, independent producer Jay Allison.
For our series, we receive quite a few essays from prisoners. Some write of their belief in their own innocence. Troy Chapman does not deny that he killed a man in a bar fight when he was 20 years old. His belief is centered on what he has learned since then. No recording equipment is allowed in the prison, so here is Troy Chapman, recorded by telephone, with his essay for This I Believe.
When the scruffy orange cat showed up in the prison yard, I was one of the first to go out there and pet it. I hadn't touched a cat or dog in over 20 years. I spent at least 20 minutes crouched down by the dumpster behind the kitchen as the cat rolled around and luxuriated beneath my attention. What he was expressing outwardly, I was feeling inwardly. It was an amazing bit of grace to feel him under my hand and know that I was enriching the life of another creature with something as simple as my care. I believe that caring for something or someone in need is what makes us human. Over the next few days, I watched other prisoners responding to the cat. Every yard period, a group of prisoners gathered there. They stood around talking and taking turns petting the cat. These were guys you wouldn't usually find talking to each other. Several times I saw an officer in the group, not chasing people away, but just watching and seeming to enjoy it along with the prisoners. Bowls of milk and water appeared, along with bread, wisely placed under the edge of the dumpster to keep the seagulls from getting it. The cat was obviously a stray and in pretty bad shape. One prisoner brought out his small, blunt-tipped scissors and trimmed burrs and matted fur from its coat. People said, "That cat came to the right place. He's getting treated like a king." This was true. But as I watched, I was also thinking about what the cat was doing for us. There's a lot of talk about what's wrong with prisons in America. We need more programs. We need more psychologists or treatment of various kinds. Some even talk about making prisons more kind. But I think what we really need is a chance to practice kindness ourselves. Not receive it, but give it. After more than two decades here, I know that kindness is not a value that's encouraged. It's often seen as weakness. Instead, the culture encourages keeping your head down, minding your own business, and never letting yourself be vulnerable. For a few days, a raggedy cat disrupted this code of prison culture. They've taken him away now, hopefully to a decent home. But it did my heart good to see the effect he had on me and the men here. He didn't have a PhD. He wasn't a criminologist or a psychologist. But by simply saying, "I need some help here," he did something important for us. He needed us, and we need to be needed. I believe we all do.
Troy Chapman with his essay for This I Believe, recorded by telephone from Michigan's Kinross Correctional Facility. A group is formed in support of Chapman. They contend that because of the changes he's made in the almost 24 years since he committed his crime, his sentence should be commuted. You can visit npr.org/thisibelieve to find out more.
Our first essayist today is Teresa Adams. It doesn't appear that she has arrived yet, so we will move on to Jan and then Jeff and wait and see if Teresa gets here. If not, then we will share that with her permission. So, Jan.
Good morning. Self-reflection. My soul is no longer dark. Demons do not follow me at every turn. Constraints do not define me. I rejoice whenever and wherever I am able. However, I live with mental illness. Some refer to it as having mental health or wellness issues. For me, it can be hell. Medication keeps me stable and has for 50 years. Treated for a host of mood disorders, I have spent time on an inpatient basis in various institutions 40 plus times. Being honest with myself and others, I have found, is the key to navigating my life as a whole. Sometimes the truth is disturbing. Emotions run raw and deep, yet holding on to thoughts and ruminating is dangerous for me. So I open myself gingerly and I share. Sharing completes me. It allows me to function beyond limitations. It allows me to be me. Thank you.
Good morning. I believe that I can choose whether I'm a happy person or not. No one else has the responsibility to make me happy. You know, as I look over my life, there's days where I wake up and I feel good, really good, and I have absolutely no idea why. And there's days when I wake up and I'm just not feeling it, and I have no idea why. So I don't know if it was intuitive or something that people taught me to do, but I've learned that life is not about how I'm feeling. Life is about what I'm doing. And if I get up out of that bed, regardless of how I felt when I awoke, and I put one foot in front of the other, and I follow the path that I'm leading that day, then I've got that peace of mind that I'm always looking for. Happiness to me is peace of mind. Peace of mind is life is about hills and valleys. Some hills are steep, some valleys are deep. Happiness for me is rolling meadows that are in between. And sometimes, and for some extended periods, those rolling meadows might go on for a while. Sometimes there might be a mountain that I didn't see. Sometimes there might be a valley. Sometimes I might trip. But I pick myself up, and I do what's in front of me to be done. Something I learned a long time ago is we can't think our way into right acting, but we can act our way into right thinking. Thank you.
All right, I'm gonna ask Eric Johnson to come up and share his, and I will get Teresa's because it's at my level.
In a world of foxes and hedgehogs, I strive to be a fox. In the 17th century BC, Archilochus said, the fox knows many things, the hedgehog knows one big thing. Fast forward to 2005, in a book called Expert Political Judgment, Phil Tetlock reported on some fabulous empirical work about formulation of beliefs, which is our topic today, and how do you make calibrated beliefs, which is to say beliefs that are aligned with what's true in the world. And his work was to get a group of expert judges, some experts, some not so much, to predict things that were about to happen, and then score them and see how well they did. And then look and see what mattered. How could you tell the good ones from the ones that weren't so good? And all of the covariates you might have thought about being educated or being older or being working in that area meant nothing. The only thing that mattered was attitude toward complexity. The foxes, the ones that were willing to entertain complexity and to think about multiple different factors, and they had tested that independently before they found out whether the people had guessed well, forecast well or not. The foxes did great, and the hedgehogs did much worse. Just to be clear, give an example of how this plays out. You might say that Marx was a hedgehog because every question you'd ask, he'd say it's all about class struggle. And so that was his big idea, and it applied to everything. By contrast, you'd say maybe Otto von Bismarck, he was sort of a fiscal conservative, but then he would toy with lots of other ideas like government pensions and tariffs and all the trappings of a social welfare state. Is more of a fox. He's willing to consider a variety of different ideas. So back to Tetlock. 10 years later, in his book Super Forecasting, Tetlock talked about ways to enhance the judgments of the foxes and make them into super forecasters, and now they can go make a lot of money on Polymarket. But that's a different conversation. So at any rate, I aspire to be a fox. I try to look at whatever it is that's in front of me from multiple points of view before I nail down where I'm going to be. For instance, for this topic, I wanted to do something. I started out with my fundamental personal philosophy, which is discussion of free will versus determinism and personal atomism, which was interesting, but was way too abstract for this kind of a talk. I tested the idea that I should go through big decisions that I've made, and how did I make them, and why did they work out well, which was fascinating to me, but the conclusion was banal. So that wouldn't do for this talk. I thought about telling you my personal mission, which again was a delightful and self-indulgent thing for me to do, but that would not be a good story for you. I'm a decision analyst, so beliefs, I could put that in context for you in a decision analytic context, which is beliefs and desires and alternatives are the three pillars of DA, but again, that's pretty abstract. Finally, I found this angle about belief formulation and foxes, which has got the animal hook and it's got a narrative that I could tell you, so that'll work. So that was one example. I do it at work as well. My previous job at Bristol-Myers Squibb, my boss there, Steve Gladys, used to notice and appreciate times that I disagreed with him. He said he liked having me around because I think different than him. And while I was pleased, actually, he and I think almost exactly the same. The reason he felt that way is that 70% of the time, I thought about my multiple different ways, and he was right, and I shut up. And then the 30% of the times that I thought of something that I thought was constructive, I'd say that, and he noticed that. So that was good. So, but Steve and I think do think similarly, but not like with Ann. Ann and I just think different, and it's wonderful, but that's a different story. Thank you.
Gave you some height.
I need it.
Good morning. This is a story that I'm sure many of you can relate to. If you're an educator, or if you were ever a girl in middle school or junior high, or you're a parent of or a friend of, I'm sure you can relate to this. This story didn't happen to me in junior high. It happened just a few weeks ago. Before we moved to Shenandoah 10 years ago, we would stop in for dinner once in a while just to get acquainted with the place. After dinner, Bill would go to the billiards tables, and I would go to the jigsaw puzzle that was there for everyone to work on. That's where I first met Sydney. If people have trouble understanding her name when she says it, always explains, like the city in Australia. So I'm calling her Sydney, not her real name, but a city in Australia. After we moved in, I continued to work on the puzzles, where Sydney and I became longtime friends. When she learned that I knew how to play Rummy Cube, she asked me to teach her. This became an evening ritual for us, although many times she said things I disagreed with or even found offensive, we continued to play together. At the same time, she could be fun and generous. Sometimes Caroline or Catherine would join us, and this was good because Sydney, who went to church every day, gave up playing all games during Lent, so I still had someone to play with. That's also when I learned, for the first time, that Sundays don't count in the 40 days of Lent. One day recently, Catherine, Sydney, and I were playing together, knowing that Caroline would join us later. Every evening, usually after about an hour, I say, "This will be my last game," and I go back to my apartment. On this particular night, I said it just as a relatively new resident, Sandy came over and asked to play. She had played with us before and played well. And at the same time, Caroline was also ready to join us. Today she asked me if I was leaving. And I said, well, I was only going to play one more game, but she could take my place now, and Sandy could have the fourth seat at the table. At the same time, Sydney was telling Sandy that we didn't have room for her and not to come back to ask to play at this table again unless someone was scheduled to be out. Sandy walked to a chair nearby and sat down. When I walked past her to leave, she came over to me and asked, what did I do wrong? I put my arm around her and said she did nothing wrong. We talked a few minutes, she cried, I left. Now what should I do? I didn't want to be associated with a group that treated people that way. I couldn't be part of a group that treated people that way, I just couldn't. I thought about it for a couple days. Finally, I got up the courage to stand up for what I believed and for the way I feel people should treat each other. I called Sydney. I'm not going to play with your group again. She said, okay. I continued, I can't be part of a group that treats people the way you treated Sandy and the way you talked to her. Again, she said, okay. I was prepared to say more, but didn't need to go on. The next day, Sydney told Catherine she was never going to play again. She would give her game away, put it in storage forever. She called me one time after that to tell me that she wasn't going to play dominoes, which we played every Sunday afternoon, but she hoped that I would still play because one of the other women really liked the game. I chose not to play dominoes. After more than a 10-year friendship, where I overlooked many of the offensive things that she said, we haven't spoken since my original phone call. We've just left messages for each other.
Karen, do you want the little step? Or I think you're doing it.
Okay,
that's what I
was thinking. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Karen McCann, and my piece is called Mama Bear and the Catholic Church. I am the Mama Bear. When my daughter Jessica was born 45 years ago, I wanted her to be baptized. I attended St. Helena's in East Norriton off and on, getting further away from church doctrine beliefs all the time. As a child, I never understood how the church could teach us these horribly severe and sad stories. I still felt this way. That weekly catechetical school was nothing but memorizing everything. No questions were to be asked. So I didn't attend Mass regularly. But I wanted this darling baby that I had chosen to have as a single parent baptized. I called and made a rectory appointment. I don't remember the priest's name, but he was old school, and my mother would have loved him. I did not. He insisted that I give him the name of my baby's father for his records, he said. I said, I'm declining to do that. I don't think that's necessary. You have my name, and I think that's all you need besides the baby's name. What is her last name then? He asked. I said, it's the same as mine. He said, I cannot baptize this baby. You're not following church doctrine. You're an unwed mother who has a baby. That is too bad for this baby. I was so incensed, I'm sure I turned purple. I picked up Jessica and left in a huff. A few hours later, a knock came at my door. It was another priest, not the same one, This man was very young. He introduced himself and I brought him in to sit down. He said he wanted to speak with me. He volunteered to baptize Jessica, saying he had the permission of the head priest, who I had just seen. He added I would not be able to stand with the married parents. I would have to stand below on a lower step. We were to wait until all of the other babies were baptized and the head priest had returned to his quarters and all of the parents and witnesses had left the area. Then baby Jessica could be baptized. So that's what I did, because my goal was to get her baptized. And that was the end of Catholicism for this girl. And I left myself open in my thinking, and this is what eventually has brought me to TPUF. Thank you.
So I will share Teresa Adams' essay. Interestingly, it connects very much to Karen's. Teresa says, I grew up in a very Catholic family. Mass every Sunday and on holy days. We said the rosary every night as a family, and we never ate dinner without saying grace first. I was asked to believe that if I am good and followed God's laws, he would take care of me. It worked until it didn't when I was 30 years old. I was diagnosed at the time with a deep brain tumor that had been present since birth. But the line I learned in my religion classes was, God made me. So I often wondered if he was on vacation the day of my conception. Sounds like Teresa. Later, I tried to return to the church, but never felt a deep connection with it. The final straw came when I was asked to stand as a sponsor for confirmation. For those of you who are unaware, confirmation is a continuation of baptism, and the role of the sponsor is to guide and support the young candidate in their spiritual journey, helping them live their faith fully. As part of my role, I needed a letter from St. Eleanor's Parish saying I was a member there. The priest explained he needed to check on something. He returned and told me they did not have a record of me attending Mass regularly. I told him if he was checking to confirm that we were putting money into our collection envelopes every Sunday, we were not. Our financial situation was tenuous at best. Needless to say, this was the last time I set foot in that spiritual home. Also, I never really felt a sense of community there. We entered, sat down for an hour, recited creeds, prayers, and call and response scripts, and then left. It was as though I attended Sunday Mass on autopilot. I was so happy when we found Thomas Paine, as I had never heard of this fascinating concept of Unitarian Universalism before. It was truly the best decision ever. We found a wonderful community that cares, and I love it here. I believe in the quiet, undeniable power of joy. It is not the fleeting, circumstantial happiness that comes from winning or acquiring. Rather, joy is a deliberate anchor for me. It is a profound realization that even in a world shadowed by uncertainty, quiet moments of wonder are always worth holding on to. We often condition ourselves to wait for the grand milestones, the promotion, the grand vacations, the monumental achievements, to grant ourselves permission to feel deeply fulfilled. But life, in its everyday rhythm, offers something much more accessible. It offers the warmth of morning sunlight filtering through a new window, the hearty laughter of a shared memory, like making upside-down snow people with my children. I have to admit, I stole the idea from Bill Watterson's Calvin and Hobbes, or the comforting taste of a favorite but simple budget-friendly meal. I believe that actively pausing to recognize and appreciate these everyday marvels is the ultimate rebellion against the fatigue of daily life. Joy is an act of choice for me. It requires me to slow down my racing mind and notice the beauty in the mundane. While I was coming up on my retirement, I realized that I was simply rushing through my days, constantly looking forward to my next lesson, the next weekend, or the next year, treating the present moment merely as a stepping stone. I was missing the opportunity to connect with my 750 students, their families, my teaching colleagues, and my administrators. I was missing out on the laughter. The cafeteria duty felt punishing, and the work intolerable. I therefore chose to add music moments to the cafeteria responsibility, where I would suddenly get up on the mic, call out a grade level, add some music, and they would have to stop eating, stand, and dance at their tables. Along with once a month Thankful Thursdays, when I would introduce the food services and custodial staff who would tear through the cafeteria, high-fiving the students, but only those students who remained seated. It was during a particularly grueling week that I was listening to some favorite music, and I stopped to watch my cat sleeping lazily in the sunlight streaming through the window. In his simple, soft slumber, I realized that I don't need a grand reason to feel a surge of gratitude. Joy was right there, waiting for me to acknowledge it. I was happy, my family and pets were safe, and I felt blessed in the serene solitude. When my three children were 2, 4, and 6 years of age, I literally escaped an abusive marriage, packing up and leaving while he was at work. Now I often recollect my young children's renewed laughter, holding their hands as we trudged through the snow, the way one would stick out his tongue during video game concentration, poetry they wrote, Lego creations they made, and the overabundance of stuffed animals who all had names, and how they would fork their vegetables to have them walk around the plate before consuming. We would read together, dance wildly, sing off tune, color, paint, play with slime, care for our homes and our pets. This belief continues to reshape how I navigate my days now in Philadelphia. When I am walking through my new neighborhood, listening to the sounds of summer, the bouncing of a young neighbor's basketball, the mowing of a lawn, the musical song of a house finch, or the cheer up cheerily of an American robin, or the bold mimicry of the northern mockingbird, who so annoyed my dad when we were children. I delight in the simple forward path I'm on. I may choose to enjoy a slow cup of decaf coffee before the errands of the day insist on being tackled. I make it a deliberate point to anchor myself in the present. I take a mental snapshot of these fleeting scenes and let their summer warmth wash over me. If you were to catch me mid-shore, you'd find me enveloped in show tunes and old favorites from my youth pouring through my speakers. In my opinion, I sound pretty spectacular, though the critics have yet to weigh in. By grounding myself in the present, I build a reservoir of resilience. When life inevitably presents me with hardships and challenges, the memory of those simple, joyful moments and acts are a steadying force. They remind me that beauty still exists and that the world is inherently good, even when the path ahead seems obscured. Texts and phone calls with my 5 siblings often remind me of the joys of growing up and sharing in a large family. We check in, a great librarian technique, with each other every morning in our thread labeled chorus, for we are a chorus of sangmeisters. Some of them can actually sing. Joy is not the absence of sorrow, but the conscious decision to let the light in despite the dark. I believe that by tuning into the small, everyday blessings, I give myself the greatest gift of all, a life lived not just in the pursuit of happiness, but genuinely experienced in the beauty of the here and now. And at this exact moment, I am joyful to share that present or that gift with all of you.
Thank you.
And now we'll have the matters of the heart. Flo?
Good morning. And Sheila, thank you so much for this beautiful service, which sets the mood and the stage for additional sharing. So at this time, we share our joys that make us feel wonderful and our sorrows or concerns that bring us down. And I invite anyone who feels so moved to come up to the podium, state your name, and speak to us.
Our closing song will be Believe in Yourself. This is Michael Bublé singing with the cast of Sesame Street. Somewhat appropriate with a baby in the room today.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
Here we go.
It's right, left, right, kick.
All right, okay.
Right, left, right, kick.
Maybe we should try it again.
Yeah.
Okay,
here we go. Ready?
Right,
left, right, kick.
Oh, no.
What?
I got it. Elmo can't do it.
Well, don't give up, Elmo. You can do it.
Yeah, you just need a little
magic.
No, Bublé.
Bublé?
Bublé.
Oh, it's Michael Bublé.
Boy, you can't do it.
what you wanna be. See what you wanna see. Believe in yourself. Just believe in yourself. Go where you wanna go. Do what you wanna do. Believe in yourself. Just believe in yourself. Some folks try to tell you there are things you shouldn't do. You're not strong enough or smart enough at all. What seems right to them quite often might be wrong for you. So be sure you try to climb before you get too scared to fall. Oh, you can be what you wanna be. Learn what you wanna learn.
Believe in yourself.
Believe in yourself. Try what you need to try. No one should question why. Believe in yourself. Just
believe in yourself.
Folks may say you're different, that you've gone and lost your senses, but the world is yours to walk in. Go ahead and leap the fences, and you'll see. Yeah. Believe in yourself, and the world belongs to you.
Stuff like a powerful rocket ignition or some timely assistance from
I'm going to ask Karen McCann to join me to extinguish the chalice. A dozen paths have crossed today, a dozen things we've heard you say. No single creed can bind our thought. No single lesson can be taught, for truth is vast and truth is wide, a shifting deep internal tide. We light the flame to see the whole, to glimpse the map of every soul. We extinguish now this physical spark to send our unique lights through the dark. Behaving differently, yet bound in grace, we carry love out of this place. Got it. It's not interested.
Guess not.
It's like, no, hang in. We came together today to listen, to witness, and to hold space for the sacred landscape of human belief. We have heard the diverse melodies of our individual truths, and we have felt the harmony that connects them. As we leave this sanctuary, may you carry the courage of those who shared with us, the deep listening of those who heard your truths, and the reminder that your own story is still being written. Go forth in peace, believing in the power of love, and knowing you do not walk alone. Thank you.